A reading from the Gospel according to Luke. While some people were speaking about how the temple was adorned with costly stones and votive offerings, Jesus said, "All that you see here in the days to come, there'll be nothing left, not a stone upon a stone. It'll all be thrown down." Then they asked him, "Teacher, when will this happen? When what sign will there be that all these things are about to happen?" And Jesus answered, "See that you be not deceived, for many will come in my name, saying, 'I am he,' and 'the time is now.' Do not follow them. When you hear of wars and insurrections, do not be terrified, for such things must happen first, but it will not immediately be the end." Then he said to them, "Nation will rise against nation, kingdom against kingdom. There will be powerful earthquakes, famines, and plagues from place to place, and awesome sights and mighty signs will come from the sky. Before all this happens, however, they will seize and persecute you. They will hand you over to the synagogues and to prisons, and they will have you led before kings and governors before my name. It will lead to your giving testimony. Remember, you are not to prepare your defense beforehand, for I myself shall give you a wisdom in speaking that all your adversaries will be powerless to resist or refute. You will even be handed over by parents, brothers, sisters, relatives, and they will put some of you to death. You will be hated by all because of my name, but not a hair on your head will be destroyed. By your perseverance, you will secure your lives." The Gospel of the Lord. In the depths of the earth of Chile, for several months, men were trying to plan and believe that they could be saved. One ran miles every day, and this week, the marathon in New York. But as he ran in the caves for months, there was no surety of his survival, nothing but belief in God and hope. Today's gospel reminds us that life is like that. Apocalyptic literature is like that too. The gospel means good news. What is the good news when we're going to be persecuted, brought before governors and princes, and killed, perhaps, by parents, brothers, relatives, and friends? Well, let's look at the gospel. People in the beginning noticed the beauty and cost of the adornments of the temple. And Jesus, perhaps even offhandedly, said, "This will all come to the end." Like the story of the rich man who built more barns for the harvest, bigger and richer and bigger, and then died the next day. To what end is the temple? When will it happen? Some people know they are dying and others just die. Jesus doesn't answer with a timeline. In fact, he basically is saying it's not the point. The gospel seems to continue with what could be trailers for all kinds of books, movies, and the apocalyptic stories of the end of the world. Would it be an asteroid, a supervolcano, tsunami, nuclear war, earthquakes, or will global warming kill the human species before the earth is engulfed by the sun? And not to plan a defense in court, what is this all about? Yet this is what it is all about. Luke wrote, when the temple was destroyed, not a stone was left on a stone. It had already happened. Wars, insurrection, the persecutions of those who followed Jesus were normative. There were betrayals. Paul and the apostles were hauled before governors, and many were martyred. This gospel uses that apocalyptic form of literature by putting in the mouth of Jesus the story as if it were a prediction, but really what he's telling them is what he told them all along, a way of coping and responding to the difficulty of their times. You will give witness. How do we give witness to hope at a time when so many are out of work, when so many in the world are hungry, when not everyone makes it out alive from mines, and when cholera starts to spread over the poor of Haiti. Best-selling stories and movies say that the end time is coming, and they make a lot of money from it. When I was teaching scripture regularly, I used to keep copies of brochures who predicted the date and time of the end of the world or the rapture. I have a stack of them whose dates are past, and now some are saying, with the Mayan calendar coming to an end. But Paul reminds us in the letter to the Thessalonians, who thought that the end was coming soon, so some stopped working and wanted just to wait. We are called to live the life we have. We are born at a particular time and gifted with the gifts and blessings that are needed for our time in history. There is a responsibility to live and to respond to the truth of our time, to build peace in the ways we know how, be it in our family, our friends, our neighborhood, but only there and then will it be possible for the world to be at peace. To work for justice, to be fair, to work for justice in the marketplace, to be honest, to recognize our interdependence with all life on the planet and the need for us to consume less. This is our responsibility, and we must live the life we have. Jesus declares that our role, as was that of the early Christians, is to be witness to the hope and healing rays of God's presence, as Malachi concluded in the first reading. We are called to live the present moment and to be open to the truth, even when it comes from those who seem to oppress us. We're called to witness to the truth that God is with us, even when we are at our last thread. This past week, a friend of mine lost her baby, who was born at 27 weeks. Kay almost died too. For days, we waited to hear she would make it. The nursing staff was shocked. "It's not supposed to be that way," they said. And we prayed. The sisters prayed. And they found hope in our prayer. Not answers, but hope. For some, hope comes in a phone call or visit. For others, in a letter or email that says we've made a difference. At this time of year, I often give my friends or family some daffodils or tulip bulbs to plant. You can't see them underground, but in the spring, there will be the promise of life anew and flowers. A simple thing. But in our lives, we plant seeds of hope in the little things we do each day. How can we give witness to the presence of God in our lives today? To our families, friends, co-workers? How can we challenge ourselves to outreach to those in need or find the grain of truth in those we'd rather not listen to? This past week, I went with some sisters to the Women of Spirit exhibit on religious life. That's found in Ellis Island. I went with Sister Erica and some of the sisters who work in our Heritage Center. And what was amazing was the little stories of sisters that made big differences. And though many of the stories were not of our congregation, they told the same story, or we could name sisters with the same story. Because those sisters gave all they had to people who were on the margins and in need. They staked their lives on it. In fact, the one Dominican sister who was on, who we saw on the wall, there were others in slide presentations and movies, was our little Sophie Spitzfaden. And our sister Erica said, you know, Sophie was small, petite, unassuming, probably uneducated woman who sat outside of Gertz for years with a little begging bell, ringing it, to collect money for those people who were poor and needed medical care in our St. Catherine's Hospital. What amazed her and amazed us was that this little sister was there in the same room as college presidents, founders of congregations. It was her little thing that enabled a not-so-little gift to the poor to have health and medical services when they needed it because of the generosity of people putting money in their baskets. We don't have to do big things. The healing rays of God are in the joy and hope we bring to others, in the little kindnesses, in the gifts, in the ways in which we share with those in need. The question of the gospel, the question of the first reading, is how will God shine in you today? How will you stand as witness before us all?